welcome to Life and Inside Job, where we explore how we might make our inner lives more nourishing places. This episode is centered on midlife and menopause, and I talk to coach Ellen Albertson about finding self-love at midlife. She's also known as the Midlife Whisperer. She's a life coach who has loads of practical, doable tips on how to bring more compassion to yourself and rock your midlife, which is the excellent title of her book, which is coming out in November. But before we get into the self-love with Ellen, let's get into loving the inside job. That came out a bit wrong, but if you have found any of these podcast episodes useful or funny or interesting, it would be just wonderful if you could either leave a review on iTunes or share it with a friend. Okay, let's get into the self-love with Dr. Ellen. Ellen, thank you so much for coming to talk to me. And I'm really caught in your upcoming book with the piece about self-love. So I would just love to explore with you how menopause can bring us into a more loving relationship with ourselves.
Yeah, that is such a great topic of conversation, because self-compassion, self-love really changed my life. I discovered it right in the thick of going through menopause in my 40s. I had been in a place in my life where I had so much self-loathing. There was this idea that when I'm perfect, when my body's perfect, my career is perfect, my marriage is perfect, then I will love myself. And I think that we're taught a lot to, you know, when we're perfect, whatever that means, then we'll feel good about ourselves. But what self-compassion says is, in self-love, we start right now. We start where we are. And I think with menopause, you know, it can feel like we're losing our bodies, we're losing our minds, and self-love is really what we need on such a deep level throughout our lifetime. But I think particularly during this period, I mean, it's a menopause. So it's a period to pause and reevaluate who we are, reevaluate that relationship with ourselves, how we can love ourselves on a deeper level.
How come it's such a struggle for us to love ourselves in the first place? Is that a particularly female thing in the culture, do you think?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So I think it is present in our culture now, and perhaps more of a female thing. I think that our generation is really, we've been taught to be people pleasers and to be, you know, the good girl. And I have go on about this extensively in my book, Rock Your Midlife, about how we are really kind of indoctrinated. I know I saw my mother sort of beating herself up, not being kind to herself. And so the reason that we sort of have this deep-seated lack of self-regard for ourselves is largely because it's built in when we're kids. So what happens is when we are children, we develop an inner self-critic. So when we're young, our caregivers, our parents, our teachers, you know, even peers, when we don't do things correctly, they criticize us. We listen to them because in order to stay safe and be loved, we have to do what we're told. So we have to, you know, clean our room and get good grades and I think stay quiet, be good, all of these things. So we have this internalized voice of early caregivers, which shows up as our self-critic and also as our people pleaser. And so that's a piece of it. We have this internalized self-critic. And again, this people pleaser, we are taught in our culture to put everybody else first. And I see this over and over again with the women that I work with. You know, we put our spouse, our kids, the dog, the house, the career first. Then we have no energy for ourselves. And so what ends up happening often is we're just flat out exhausted. And we actually can also develop depression. And in the book, I really talk about how depression is like a forced stop sign that's forcing us to take a pause because we're not doing it on our own. And women during midlife and during menopause actually have the highest rate of depression of any group for gender and age. It's like between 12 and 13%. So it's kind of like we don't take care of ourselves. We have to stop because we're too exhausted or too depressed to carry on.
Mm. Yeah, and I like you, the way I perceive it is this is set up really early in life. It's set up really early. And I think that, well, I hope that as the way we bring up girls is changing and the way that periods are being viewed now, and there's a less menstrual shame, that by the time my daughter is 15, by the time she comes to menopause, that she won't have built up this sort of endless exhaustion from people pleasing and from putting herself last. It's though we've been marinating in not good enough, you know. Even what I see in the world is even the most kind of like super leader, powerful grr women, you know, who are very grr and powerful in their professional lives, can easily get into kind of rigid old school 1950s domestic roles at home.
Yeah, and I think also, as you know, you talk about these overachieving women. I know in my own life, and so many women that I know, we overachieve as a way of feeling like, well, if I get this degree, if I get this raise, if I have this position, then I'll feel okay about ourselves. What ends up happening is we're carrying all of this not enough self-loathing stuff in a backpack into our future, and that's what shows up. And we're constantly on this hamster wheel of not good enough. So what I teach women now is, let's start with the self-love. Let's start with the good enough and be okay, because we are good enough. You know, I mean, the most amazing thing about us is just our humanness, that we are alive, that we are, you know, part of this world, and just taking in how good and precious each and every single one of us is in this moment, rather than always chasing. I know for me, it was like, I have more degrees than the thermometer. You know, I thought, well, when I become an RD, registered dietitian, I have my master's degree, then I'll feel good about myself. Or when I get that PhD, then I'll feel good about myself. You know, when I have a best-selling book, then I'll feel good about myself. But I never felt okay, because the good enough, feeling good enough and feeling okay about yourself is an internal thing that we have to start by valuing and loving ourselves. And the essence of the self-love piece is really self-compassion, is kind of the how of self-love.
Ooh, let's learning. Talk about that. How? Let's get really down and grounded into the how. So if I'm the listener listening to this and I'm going, oh God, that's me. Oh yes, ticking the degrees and the accomplishments off my list. Then how do we kind of ignite that voice of love that in a real way? Because it's not automatic.
Yeah, I mean, I think as women, one of the things we do really well, right, is we love our friends. So you start to think about treating yourself the way you would a good friend. So for a moment, you know, we just take a moment and think about, okay, you've had a friend who has had some kind of issue in their life, maybe a health crisis or problem with a spouse or a career issue or a fender bender. She calls you and she's like, oh my God, this just happened. What do you do? How do you treat her? What's your tone of voice? What's your posture? You know, of course, a good friend, we're there in a heartbeat, right? Now think about what happens when you have had something that's frustrated you, some embarrassment, again, fender bender, problem with spouse, problem with career. How do you treat yourself? What's your tone of voice towards yourself? What's your posture? What do you do? The whole point of self-compassion, which again is this kind of how of self-love, is you think about, gosh, if a good friend went through what I'm going through, what would I do with ourselves? What we often do is that we just get right into fix-it mode. We don't take a moment. You know, how many times have we been in like a car accident and we're like, oh my God, like I've got to fix this right away, or, you know, my spouse is going to kill me, or what am I going to do? I got to call my car insurance company. We go right into fix-it mode or rumination mode instead of going like, oh my gosh, I need a hug right now. I need to pause. I need to just take a few moments for myself to digest this and just to offer myself compassion because I'm stressed and I'm suffering. So it's the essence is really thinking about how would I treat a friend, and you start to apply that to yourself. And what's beautiful about self-compassion is it's a muscle. It gets stronger the more you use it.
Mm. And it you know, even the smallest little spark of, oh yeah, well, if it was Jane, then I would do like that. But anyway, I've got to fix it, you know. Yeah. Part of the thing about being fallible is that even the smallest spark of remembering, even just remembering the possibility that there's an open door for compassion somewhere, is fantastic.
Yeah, and you start to develop a compassionate voice. And it's really powerful during menopause, because when you have that brain fog, when you are struggling with your sleep, you know, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you can't get back to sleep, you can give yourself compassion, not to make it go away, but just because you're struggling. Mm-hmm. You can say, oh my gosh, you know, Kate, this is so hard, or, you know, Ellen, whatever, just, this is so hard, and just be there for yourself. And it really changes everything.
Mm. Yeah. First, step one, do nothing.
Yeah. And there are actually, there's a lot of books and literature on self-compassion, but Kristen Neff has 3 key elements. And so those elements are being kind to yourself rather than judgmental. So there is action here. Again, so often we are our own worst critics. We are, you know, horrible to ourselves. If we talked to our friends the way we talk to ourselves, the way we talk to our bodies, we wouldn't have any friends. So you're kind to yourself. You watch that self-judgmental talk and you reverse that. You treat yourself with kind talk, supportive words. That's number one. Number two is this element of common humanity, which says that we all make mistakes. We all fail. Most women go through menopause. It's not just you. And when we have this knowing that this is normal, we don't feel so alone. We realize this is just part of the human condition. I think, you know, COVID's taught a lot of us about that, of just everybody's going through this. Most of us on the planet are going through some challenges and changes because of the pandemic. So this is this element called common humanity. And then the third element is mindfulness. So with mindfulness, we're aware that we're struggling. So we know when we get that, the doctor tells us about, you know, you've got this diagnosis, we notice, oh my gosh, where's my body at right now? And I think that's an issue with menopause too. We don't, we're not in our body sometimes. We just sort of like are from living from the head up. You notice, oh my gosh, my body, I'm feeling this stress, this struggle. You're mindful of your suffering and you ask yourself, what do I need right now? Mm. And you give yourself what you need.
Mm. That's so, it's great to hear that broken down so clearly. Because it can be with the sort of sandwich generation stuff and the stress and the brain fog and the sleeplessness, it can be so hard to implement these changes. And I really want to bring, if I could do anything, I would bring a sort of blanket of compassion to wrap the menopausal world in. Just because making change is difficult in this world for midlife women. You know, I have this sort of this sense that our natural impulse for health moves us towards change, and the world pushes back. You know, the culture wants things to stay as the status quo, to keep us small, to keep us behaving nicely, to keep us getting those degrees and working super hard. And it takes a lot of softness in order to really, really come to that place of self-compassion and space and support, actually. Yeah.
But the lovely thing is that we have this support from ourselves 24/7, you know, at any point in time. And self-compassion should feel easy. It should feel good. You know, the other day I did a post on Instagram. I was so tired. I just took a nap, 10 minutes. And that was what I needed in the moment. It doesn't have to be fancy. We always think about self-care as like, you know, manis and pedis and facials and massages. But sometimes, I know you're a big fan of napping. Sometimes we just need a nap Sometimes we need a cry. Sometimes we, you know, need to talk to someone. Sometimes we need to journal. So I usually have people make a list of all the ways you already care for yourself or how you'd like to care for yourself. And then when you're feeling that, oh, I'm just not feeling okay. I didn't sleep well last night. I've got too much on my plate. You pull out the list and you say, what can I do for myself right now? How do I treat myself? And it should feel easy. And you're right. It, you know, I love the point you made about this isn't what our society gives us, right? Our culture wants to box us in. First of all, they want us to feel uncomfortable and bad, because if we felt good about ourselves, we felt like menopause was normal and we celebrated and said, hey, it's just a transitional period. There's a period where I can pause and learn a lot about myself. You know, we wouldn't need all these products and things. If we felt good about ourselves, we wouldn't, you know, be on this constant, you know, consumer culture of buying things. We're taught buy something, watch something, eat something, consume something to feel better. And sometimes, like you said, it's just a matter of we need to pause. It's menopause. We need to pause. Maybe just, you know, be grateful for where we're at, do a little something for ourselves, ask for what we need. But it's not about this constant self-improvement or buying or doing something or stuffing our emotions to feel better.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. I'm going to give a ceremonial pause around that statement. Oh, except listeners, please consume podcasts, of course, and books, because those are good things which will nourish you.
No, it is. It's really true. Making those kinds of choices of seeing how you want to spend your most precious resource, which is really your time. And I think that's the thing about menopause and midlife is we start to realize that there is more time behind us than in front of us. And it's a bit of a wake-up call. I had this conversation with a client the other day. She's, you know, her mother's going through end of life. And we start to think about, you know, who do I want to be? How do I want to live the second chapter of my life?
Yeah. And that I get so excited about that. I get so, mortality makes me so excited because it's a wake-up call.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I do hospice work for partially for that reason, because it does, it's in your face and you realize, you know what, I'm not going to live forever and I want to enjoy my life and live to the fullest. And I think that the wonderful thing about this period of time is that you can look at all the mistakes that you made, you can forgive yourself, which is part of practicing self-compassion, and you can decide like what changes do I want to make in terms of how I treat myself, my relationship with myself, what I do is my career, how I relate to my body, my wellness. There's so many things you can do. You can change your relationships. You can change anything you want. It's the sky's the limit. And that's empowering knowing. And first of all, we can change from within. And when we start to change from within, what shows up without changes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And how do you see, do you advise your clients to take a wider pause other than that mindful moment to call in their best friend?
Yes, it's definitely midlife is a real time where there is so much change. As you said, we're the sandwich generation. So to take a wider pause and really think about who am I really on the deepest level, learning to be authentic, learning what do I need to do to treat myself like a good friend? What do I need to do for my energy levels? What feeds me? What drains me? What empowers me? How do I need to shift my relationships? So I do encourage my clients, and that's a large portion of coaching and a large portion of what I cover in the book. And I give people actual rock your midlife labs, things people can do to really work on their relationship with themselves and to really take a big pause so that they can have an amazing next chapter.
And that might be time with a coach or a therapist or a professional, or time reading a book like yours, or journaling, or even, you know, taking, if it's possible, to take time away.
Yeah, and it's amazing how quickly things shift for people. I think part of it too is also examining all of your limiting beliefs. So I think that we have a lot of negative limiting beliefs around menopause, around this period of time. If you Google midlife, conjoined with crisis.
I do that way too often. And it goes, the Google list goes weight loss, depression, and loss of libido. Mm. Oh. It doesn't look very jolly.
But I think it's important that we question those things, because I think that it, if we don't, sometimes it becomes a fait accompli. We think, oh my gosh, menopause is going to be horrible. And for a lot of women, it's not this horrible thing. I mean, for me, it wasn't that bad. I'm actually blessedly through. And, you know, I got through it alive. You don't necessarily have to gain weight, lose your libido, have all of those things. And, well, you know, if we're talking specifically about the weight loss issue, I've been a dietitian for 30 years, and a lot of the weight issue isn't due to menopause. It's due to the fact that we're too sedentary and we're eating too many calories of the wrong kinds of food. So often we've like put everything in this menopause bucket, but there's a lot of other things going on, and all of what, and it's sort of a, everything is interrelated. So where your hormones are at is related to how you're fueling your body, how much rest you're getting, even your thoughts, the things that you're doing. So everything is interrelated, and we have to kind of look at our lives and take that pause and look at things holistically.
Mm. Well, I think food is a wonderful place to bring some self-compassion and some self-love, because again, we meaning humans, human females, seem to use food a lot to manage our emotions and for this sort of reward and punishment. It's often very it's very split between good food and bad food, and there's a lot of unhelpful patterns around food. So how can we bring more self-love to what the food that we're putting in our body?
Yeah. So part of that is really understanding what food can actually do. I think, again, we're taught if we have difficult emotions, rather than learning how to express them, digest them in a healthy way. You know, this is sadness. This is loneliness. This is longing. This is frustration. This is anger. We're not supposed to feel those things. So what we do is we turn to food to stuff our emotions. The problem with that is that, sure, we feel a little bit better momentarily, because when we consume food, we raise the level of the neurotransmitter dopamine, which is the brain chemical of reward. But after we've had that, you know, threesome with Ben and Jerry's, that Chardonnay and cheese, whatever it is that we do, we're still stuck with the same issues. We're still stuck with the same difficult emotions. And on top of it, we might feel some remorse, regret, even guilt around what we've just done, and we're not doing our bodies any favor. So what we need to do is give ourselves permission to feel. I have people think about their acronym HALT, which stands for hungry, angry or anxious, lonely, and tired. And we put bored in there if we like. So if you're hungry, great, eat, because there's a feedback mechanism. Great, eat, have something nutritious. And certainly it's fine to eat those things that you should eat, things that you enjoy eating. And what happens is when you eat, when you're hungry, you get full and you stop. But if you eat because you're angry, you're anxious, you're lonely, you're tired, food's not going to do it for you. It's not going to address that issue. It's just going to mask the issue for the moment. And then you're still going to be angry, anxious, lonely, tired, bored. So you need to find, first, feel your emotions. So name those emotions. And that what happens is you bring the emotion into, from the primitive part of your brain, to your frontal cortex, executive functioning part, and you can help digest it. Then feel it in your body. What am I feeling right now in my body? What do I need right now? And how can I soothe myself without food? And that's where that self-compassion piece comes in. And that list that we talked about earlier, you pull it out and you say, you know, right now I could use a good read. I know for me, when I read, my brain goes somewhere else, especially if I'm in an engrossing book, learning something, or in a great novel, or even like listening to music is really powerful. Meditating, doing some yoga, taking a walk. So we need to kind of expand the ways that we care for ourselves. Food's something that we just automatically do. And again, we're taught, like, you know, get a happy meal, right? Like, you know, have a...
Can we just pause for a complete a squawk of disbelief? It's called, I just realized, they're called happy meals. But they're not going to make you happy. Worst named food on the planet. What would you call them? What could we rename them? A grumpy. Oh, something about the the texture of the food, the texture of that is the pappy meal. There we go. That's
oh, I love is. That because, yeah, they're actually made not to have to chew them at
yes,
all.
You, yeah. And there's that kind of like soft pappy kind of,
You know, anyway. And we have a term called, you know, SAD diet, which stands for Standard American Diet. I don't know if you have it, you know, in Britain, but it's, you know, all of the processed food. And if you're struggling with menopause, those foods are going to make it worse. I mean, the research really shows that a whole foods, plant-based diet actually helps to balance your level of hormones and that, that those types of foods fill you up without filling you out. You're satisfied, you're nourished. So I help a lot of women through this period by eating a much healthier plant-based diet. It doesn't have to be crazy. I mean, people are so confused, like what's the right thing to eat? It's three simple things, whole foods, plant-based. So it doesn't mean you have to be vegan, but you're eating a lot more of plant-based foods. The second thing is don't eat anything your grandmother would have eaten. So no additives.
I love that advice. I love that advice. It's so simple and clear.
Yeah, and eat till you're satisfied, not stuffed. So eat till you're 80% full, not stuffed. And if we did those things, we wouldn't need, you know, all of these magic bullet solutions that don't help us at all.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. What did your grandmother eat?
My grandmother, my gosh, she was kind of a nutrition pioneer. I didn't actually, wasn't blessed to know her. She passed before I was born, but she definitely, you know, she actually had a grocery store. So lots and lots of, you know, fruits and vegetables. And my mom actually was a real pioneer in terms of vegetarianism. She wrote a vegetarian cookbook when I was little. And we went,
That must have been in the 70s, right?
Yeah, it was in the 70s. Yeah, it was really strange. She read, you know, Diet for a Small Planet. Which was about the necessity, not just to eat this way for your health, well-being, but animal-based food uses a lot of resources. And so if we are to feed the planet, you know, 8.5 billion of us, eating more plants and less animals really helps with that. So it's like one day we were eating Franks and beans and potato chips, and the next day it was tofu. It just like she read the book. She changed our diet overnight. No McDonald's, no TV dinners. You know, it was a little challenging as a kid, but, you know, I grew to, you know, enjoy it. And today I'm so blessed. My fiance is a master gardener. So we have this time of year, more tomatoes, kale, squash, eggplants. I think we have 40 eggplant plants. So we're eating.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with them all?
I've learned to make eggplant bacon, which is quite delicious.
Okay. Now my head's revolving. Oh, what do you do? How do you do that? You slice it and...
You slice it. I actually brush it with a sort of, it's a soy sauce, soy sauce, a little maple syrup. I live in Vermont, so okay. We have a lot of maple syrup here. Soy sauce, maple syrup, a little bit of sriracha, a little bit of soy sauce, a little
what
bit
is
of...
sriracha?
Sriracha is a, it's kind of like the Asian ketchup. It's a hot sort of a tomato-y based chili sauce.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't have to, if you don't like spicy, that's okay. And then you just bake it, you slice it very thin. And you bake it in the oven for about 45 minutes. And it's not quite bacon, but, you know, if you squint really hard, it's delicious, though.
That is awesome. Thank you. Recipe tips as well, listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, I was a celebrity chef in the 90s, so.
Were you?
Yeah.
You're full of surprises. Actually, I saw on your Instagram you were pulping your tomatoes.
Yes.
Looking very competent and assured.
That was after I learned how to use the device. But yes, tomatoes are amazing.
Yes. That's Instagram for you, huh?
Yes.
Now, there was a question there and it's just floated away from me. Oh, I know what I was going to ask. So if you're eating a plant-based diet, how do you ensure you get enough protein? What do you recommend to get enough protein through your day?
That's a great question because women actually at over 50, we need more protein than the general population. The general population is 0.8 grams per kilogram body weight. And after 50, we need more like 1 to 1.5 grams of protein. So you do need a lot of protein. So there's nothing wrong with animal products. I recommend eating lean products, things like you know, chicken, fish, you know, eggs, low-fat dairy. And using them, you know, a little bit like a condiment. So the way that you would see in some ethnic cuisines where they use it as a flavoring, So really, with if you're having an animal protein, you know, a serving is about 4 ounces, about the size of your palm. But also there's lots of vegetarian sources. So certainly, you know, soy-based products like tempeh and tofu, beans. So, you know, chickpeas, garbanzos, black beans are really wonderful. Nuts and seeds are great as well, but in small amounts. So you want to make sure to spread your protein throughout the day. And I would say if people, you know, have questions, you know, reach out to me. I did a Instagram live yesterday and we were talking about how to kind of spread it out. I start my day with a green smoothie with a plant-based protein powder that's either made of soy protein or pea protein. Lunch is usually a big salad. And I usually throw either, I like tinned fish. So, you know, salmon, tuna, sardines, or maybe, again, some chickpeas, some beans or tofu on top of that. And then dinner, I often have, if I want something quick, simple, and easy, I'll have a plant-based burger. So I don't know if they have them in the UK, but those Beyond Burgers or a black bean burger, or again, a salmon burger, or, you know, a little bit of chicken or fish, or, you know, there's nothing wrong with red meat too, but again, using more of like the lean cuts, like the sirloin. Mm. So spreading it out throughout your day and just being aware of that, you know, I usually think about if you have a plate, if you want to make half your plate, basically fruits and vegetables. So fill out the bulk of your diet is fruits and vegetables, 4 ounces of protein. So about the size again of your palm, that's 1/4 of your plate. And then your carbohydrates is about the size of your fist. So that would be like a half a cup of rice or maybe a cup of pasta, but trying to get more of the complex carbohydrates, the carbohydrates that are less processed, more whole foods, things like whole grains. So, you know, it doesn't have to be complicated. Again, the media tries to make, and the diet industry makes diet so complicated, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah. And it's part of this thing where we're encouraged to bypass our own knowing, i.e. in our knowing from our lineage, what your mother and your grandmother were eating, and go to some other fancy fix it diet when actually we know what we need.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, with menopause, things like soy products have these phytoestrogens that can really help the fiber. So there is a lot, you know, to question, am I feeling this way? Is it menopause? Is it diet? You know, am I getting enough exercise, enough rest? So it's all interrelated, because how you eat, how you treat yourself also impacts your hormones. So everything is interconnected. So don't blame it all on menopause, but kind of look at everything holistically. And then you start small, just figure out like, what is like one thing I can do to treat myself a little kinder today?
Yeah. Yeah. And over time that just builds. That's wonderful. I think we're very aligned.
Absolutely.
Maybe we've swapped books under the table. But it's great. It's really good to talk to somebody who's speaking the same language and is coming to the same conclusions from a different background. Really lovely. I'd like to hear more about your book, Rock Your Midlife. It'd help if I could pronounce the title, wouldn't it? Rock Your Midlife. Is that better?
There you go. Rock that you've got it.
So. Rock Your Midlife.
Perfect.
So you have 7 steps, which is, you know, it's all very nicely broken down and simple and straightforward, which is just so delicious.
Thank you. Well, you know, I felt like there's a lot of memoirs out there, and they are, you know, and I felt like there was a need for more of a how-to book that contained both, you know, I tell some of my stories, my health crisis, my divorce, my empty nest, and the stories of my clients, but also giving people tons and tons of specific things that they can do, from journaling exercises, lots of specific tips, things that people can do to really transform themselves, and in doing that, transform their lives. So I really feel like we need to transform, you know, again, that self-love, how we treat ourselves, how we feel about ourselves, that empowerment piece comes from within. So the 7 steps are, the first step is after you get unstuck. So I have a whole section on getting unstuck and talking about why we really are stuck at this point.
What do you mean by stuck? What do you mean by stuck?
Having trouble making change. Okay. So feeling like, and I think the biggest issue is that we're comfortably uncomfortable. So your brain isn't interested in you being self-actualized or being happy. Your brain wants you to stay out of danger. And so transformation change in terms of how your brain is wired can be dangerous. So we have a natural predisposition to staying stuck. But what ends up happening is, you know, we feel kind of like caged tigers, right? We're just sort of, if you've ever seen a, you know, a caged tiger or a lion, they're pacing their cage, they're depressed, they're unhappy. And we're not being our true selves and we're not living up to our full potential. So I have a whole chapter on getting unstuck. And then the steps are, who am I really? From confused to authentic. That's step one. So you have to know yourself on a deep level if you want to rock midlife. Because if you don't know yourself, it's kind of like climbing up this ladder of success, but it's up against the wrong building. And that was my story of just like, yeah, I was at the top, but it wasn't me. And there's this glorious confidence and deliciousness when you can come out and say, you know, like on Instagram, I don't wear makeup. I look kind of goofy. You know, yes, I've had some glam shots and things, but, you know, being your true authentic self, because nobody can tell you you're doing it wrong, right? So when you show up and it's like, this is who I am at midlife. And I think more of women are doing that, which is awesome. So be authentic. Step two is that befriend yourself from self-loathing to self-love that we just talked about. Step three is energize yourself from poop to supercharge. So I talk about diet, exercise, rest, and also a little bit of the energetics. I'm also a Reiki master. So the energetics of shifting your vibration. Step four is reprogramming your brain from muddy waters to crystal spring. So how do we get over that kind of menopausal brain?
Are they Bruce players?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm over muddy waters and now I'm into crystal spring.
Crystal springs. Yeah, absolutely. But there's a lot we can do to, you know, reprogram our brain to stay more positive. The fifth step is empowering yourself from helpless to in charge. So knowing that we have choices, so often we think that, you know, we don't take responsibility for our lives. And then the sixth step is rehab your relationships, which is so important because as you start to change, not everyone likes the new you or doesn't know how to relate to the new you. So how do you say like, hey, I'm a butterfly now. You're treating me like a caterpillar, but really, see the wings?
I think there's a lot of lost friendships and a lot of lost relationships because menopause is such a power for change and such a power for healing that it can really, yeah, it can really leave other people behind.
Yeah. And things like divorce too. I know when I got divorced, my ex got most of our friends because I left. And so, you know, but the beautiful thing is though that I have such incredible friends now and I am engaged to an amazing man and I just have friends who really see me as me. So the people who really love you on the deepest level will stick with you. And then the other people you'll find, you'll create some space for something new. So I have a whole chapter about letting that people pleaser go, developing boundaries, and then also learning nonviolent communication. So learning how to communicate with people. And then the last step is enlighten yourself. So, you know, what's spirituality? How do you find purpose and meaning and really make this next juicy second adulthood powerful? And, you know, find your passion and purpose.
Wow. So you got it covered, right?
I do. And then I have a 7-day plan so people can start right away and start enacting it. Cause you have to, you kind of need to start where you are and start, even if it's something small, you know, as you get started, it'll be a snowball effect and you'll be able to build and grow and rock your midlife.
So now that you're postmenopausal, you're in your second spring. So I'm imagining a listener who's in perimenopause and is maybe struggling and taking notes and thinking about, certainly written down the title of your book, Rock Your Midlife, and is thinking about what sort of steps she can take tonight or this afternoon in her life. I forgot what I was going to ask. Where was I going with that?
I think you were saying now that I'm postmenopausal, what would I recommend?
Oh, yes. I'm completely lost.
That's okay.
So much into my perimenopausal listener, can you describe how you feel inside yourself in your postmenopause now in your second spring?
Yeah. Oh my God. I feel so incredible. I am having the time of my life. I feel like a teenager again. I think that, you know, I follow the steps in my book. I really got to know myself deeply, like the flaws and accepting all of that and, you know, my strengths, what am I awesome at? And then what am I, you know, and being able just to accept that I make mistakes, that I'm not perfect, accepting, you know, the wrinkles and the gray hair and liking it, you know, mm-hmm. I don't, you know, I look in the mirror and I really, truly, deeply love the person that I am, the person that I see, the person that I'm becoming. You know, physically, I do feel great. I don't have the energy that I had in my 30s and 40s. You know, we do slow down a little bit, but I can accept that. I've changed, you know, the way that I work out. But then that self-love piece, that was a really transformative moment in my life. I was actually looking for something to help women with body image. And I was fortunate mm-hmm. enough to meet Kristen Neff, who is the pioneer in this whole area of self-compassion. And she required me to study it. And when you start practicing self-compassion, you just can't, you know, say those horrible things to yourself anymore. You can't treat yourself the same way. So I've really become my own best friend. Mm-hmm. And I feel really good physically. My mind's actually pretty clear these days, which is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. And so I'm here to say, if you're listening, you'll get through this, but it's so much is about just being easy with yourself, slowing down, you know, really, if you're going through something, asking yourself, is this really going to matter to me in, you know, 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years, drilling down into your core values, what truly matters to you in your life, and using those core values to inform you, making your decisions and motivating you to really make the most of your life. So yeah, it's great on the other side, I have to say, but it is nice to have this transformational physiological thing that happens to us. I really feel like my mid early 40s, you know, my late 40s, early 50s, mid 50s were like being that, you know, chrysalis. Mm-hmm. I was going through divorce. I had a health crisis. I literally went blind 3 times, my retina detached, and went through a lot of changes, empty nest, all of that stuff. And I feel like the butterfly now.
Yes. Thank you for sharing your beautiful wings and your, I don't know, there are some butterflies that migrate a long way. You know, in our world, we quite often use the metaphor of the butterfly and the chrysalis and all that kind of thing. But that can seem a bit fey and a bit fragile and a bit insubstantial, but it's important to also remember that some species of butterfly migrate across continents. And if I'm really clever, I will go and find out what species that is.
Yeah, it's, well, the monarch does that. You know. But a lot of times, and there's a couple of interesting things too, the DNA of the caterpillar and the butterfly is identical. So you're still the same person. It's just that really famous Brené Brown quote of, you know, let go of who you think you're supposed to be and embrace who you are. And I think that's why the work that you're doing, your podcast, your books, all of us that are in this sphere are so important, because we're saying to women, if every single one of us embraces who we are, we give ourselves all permission to shine our light and just be like, yeah, I'm a hot mess, but I'm a compassionate hot mess. But the monarch actually, as they go through their journey, they actually die and reproduce more monarchs. So they kind of like have a, you know, I don't know, like a telephone tag of going across continents.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much. Just before you go, if you could give only one top tip for a wonderful inside life, what would it be?
It just goes back to that love yourself, you know, love yourself and everything unfolds from there. You truly can't, you know, when you love yourself, you just stop doing things that insult your soul. You start, you know, being in relationships that don't work, a career that's not right for you, feeding your body food that's not good. You start to really do all the things that are in your best interest when you truly love yourself. And it just, you know, the research really shows when you practice this self-compassion, the depression, the stress, the anxiety go down, but also the well-being, the optimism, the resiliency increase. So it sort of works both levels and it's very powerful.
And how do we get hold of your book? When is it ready?
It is baked. I'm baking it as we talk. It isn't, you're doing the same thing. It's like pregnancy, isn't it? It's like, I am like 8 months and I'm like, get this thing out of me already, you know?
But It is birth by any other means. They're very square and they've got pointy corners. Very hard to push out.
So absolutely. So the book is actually being launched on November 9th. If you want to get hold of a copy, you can Google me or go to Instagram. The Midlife Whisperer is my my handle. And I'm giving away free copies for people who want to be on my launch team. So I'm going to sell it for 99 cents as of November 9th. If you want a copy before then, reach out to me, or it's right in my bio on Instagram and people can get a copy. And I'm excited to share all this. I'm excited to read your book too. It's coming out in February, correct?
Yeah, next year in the spring. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll have to have you on to talk about that.
I'd love to. That would be really cute. Thank you so much for talking and for sharing your wisdom. And I've loved how grounded and doable you make everything.
You're so welcome. Thank you for having me on and allowing me to share with your listeners.
You can find Ellen at drellenalbertson.com. That's drellenalbertson.com. And on Instagram at the_midlife_whisperer. And I'm sure that her book will be plastered all over the website and all over Instagram. And just in case you forgot the title, it's called Rock Your Midlife: 7 Steps to Transform Your Life and Make Your Next Chapter Your Best Chapter. And I just love that upbeat title. And that's available from early November. I think she said the 9th in the recording, and it says 16th somewhere else. So very soon anyway, not long to wait for that. And I'd love to hear your response to the issues we discuss in the conversation, and how your self-compassion is developing, and, you know, really celebrating every small step that you make. I'd love to hear, and to hold space for your small steps of self-love in your life. And you can find me on Instagram at Kate_Codrington. And don't forget to join me very soon for another exciting voyage into the inside world.